From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host today, Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony, and we are delighted to have you on board with us. Washington Watch begins right now. Let's start with this clip.
A crisis hardly even begins to describe what is going on at our southern border right now. Month after month, year after year, since 2021, our nation has seen a humanitarian and national security crisis at our border.
Well, that, of course, was Republican Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday delivering remarks before deploying the Arkansas National Guard troops to the southern border. The Biden administration's mishandling of the chaos at our southern border has literally transformed communities all throughout the country and has, quite frankly, left our nation vulnerable to potential terrorist attacks. A recent study actually reveals that the administration has even allowed hundreds of thousands of migrants to bypass our border controls and literally fly directly into airports throughout the United States. So what do we know about this parole program that might include work permits? Well, Montana Congressman Matt Rosendale, who is a member of the House Border Security Caucus, will be joining me in a few moments to discuss that. And a major win for the pro-life movement in Florida yesterday that, frankly, has Democrats up in arms.
Just yesterday, the Florida Supreme Court bowed to extremist Republicans in Tallahassee and overturned precedent to allow the 15-week abortion ban here in Florida to stand.
That was Democrat Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz earlier today during a House Democratic field hearing on abortion. Liberty Counsel's Matt Staver will be joining me to discuss the decades-long effort to overturn the precedent that was set by a previous Florida Supreme Court. But an abortion referendum still is on the ballot in Florida this November, so the battle is far from over. Matt Staver will be joining me to discuss that momentarily as well. And we're continuing our daily segment on election integrity. Of course, this is coinciding with the release of my new book entitled Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. It is now available wherever books can be purchased, including Amazon.com. We'll be talking a little bit more about that later on in the program. But this issue of election integrity is huge. It's absolutely huge. Well, today in Wisconsin, polls remain open even now for two amendments in that state, the intent of which is to strengthen election integrity in the state of Wisconsin. Trevor Carlson from the Foundation for Government Accountability will explain that situation in Wisconsin and why viewers and listeners who are still there need to get out and vote if they've not already done so, and to vote yes on these amendments. The polls close in Wisconsin at 5 p.m. Central Time today. And in Oklahoma, we have the tragic death of a 16-year-old student. And frankly, the left seized this story to push their radical gender ideology. But as new facts about this case come to light, the true story not only exposes the lies of the left, but it is also, more importantly, showing how children who need guidance, who need boundaries from a loving family, how these children can become victims to the LGBT agenda. I'll be talking to FRC's director of the Center for Family Studies, Dr. Jennifer Bowens, about that. So we've got a lot to bring your way on the program today. Let me encourage you and remind you, as always, of our website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of information available there for you, so don't miss it. TonyPerkins.com. All right, let's jump into the first topic for today. According to a disturbing report that has come from the Center for Immigration Studies, now y'all will listen to this. Catch this. The Biden administration has authorized almost 400,000 migrants to travel to U.S. airports as part of a parole pipeline that was created by the Department of Homeland Security. But more than 300,000 of these migrants have traveled through Miami before receiving parole and possible eligibility for work permits. But the Center for Immigration Studies has now found, in addition to Miami, there are some seven other major airports throughout the country where these migrants have flown. So look, all of this appears to be yet another example of how the Biden administration is deliberately undermining any effort for border security. So we want to talk about this. Joining me now is Congressman Matt Rosendale. He's a member of the House Border Security Caucus, which I also was a member of while I was there in Congress. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Montana. Congressman Rosendale, always an honor to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Jody. It's always great to be with you.
Well, thank you. Listen, let's this border security, you're right on top of this issue. Seems every day that something new comes out about the Biden administration's mismanagement of our border. Let me get your reaction to this latest news.
They are using every tool that's available to them, the Biden administration is, in order to bring as many illegals into our country just as rapidly as they possibly can. When we heard about sending some additional funding to the southern border for border security, as you delved into the details, we saw that it was nothing more than trying to build additional housing on the border, trying to hire additional CBP agents on the border only to process people faster and bring them into the country faster so they can get as many people into the country illegally as possible during the Biden administration. This goes back to almost ties, it dovetails in with your election integrity conversation that you're having also, Jody, because what happens is when you start having millions, literally millions, we know that there's somewhere north of 9 million illegals that have come into the country under the Biden administration. We've got another like 2 million gotaways. But with these people here, when they start getting counted for the census, for the redistribution of members of Congress, when the next census takes place, this is all a very long-term, methodical plan, devious plan, to make sure that they can place people where they want them in order to sway the electorate into the place where they want it, where they can get additional members of Congress where they want them. So it is a long-term plan. It's a long-term play. But these people, nearly 400,000 that you said very accurately that are coming in, they're being granted parole status. We don't know how well they've been vetted, if they've been vetted at all. And with parole status, that gives them the ability to travel around the country freely where they want to. They're going to be eligible for benefits. They're going to be eligible for picking up work passes. And so the likelihood of us ever being able to get them out of this country is very difficult.
You know, and at the same time, Congressman Rosendale, we've got the White House at a press briefing today, National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby. He's out there saying there's nothing the president can do. The situation is all because Congress is not supplemental that the Senate sent over. In fact, let's play clip five. I want to get your response to this.
The president absolutely believes that along that border we do have significant national security concerns that have to be met. But you said something really good in your question that I loved, that while these concerns are going on, the bill languishes. So what's needed? It's not anything more from the president. What's needed is for Speaker Johnson to do his job and get that thing on the floor. Let's get it voted on.
Your reaction?
That is just completely false. We know that the president has taken 64 separate actions, President Biden has, in order to open our border. He has been collaborating with Secretary Mayorkas to make sure that this takes place. If it was necessary for Congress to take action, then we would not have been able to seal the border under President Trump, because all the actions that he took, whether it was through policy or executive orders, were able to secure our border. And since Biden has taken office and unwound all of those policies, all of those measures, that is where we have seen record breaking illegal entries into our country every single month since he has taken office. And I am gravely concerned. I mean, we saw the attack in Russia just within the last 30 days. And there was four terrorists, ISIS-K terrorists, that went in and killed 143 innocent Russians. And how many ISIS-K agents have come in, or terrorists have come into our country over the last 3 years? How many Chinese communists who wish to do us harm have come in? And all under this 2 million gotaway number that we're dealing with, Jody. I've traveled down to the border with you, not at the same place as you, with you. We have traveled to that border, and we know that it is not secure, and that President Biden has the ability, if he so decided to do so, to secure that border, and he chooses not to.
Yeah, and listen, you bring up a great point. In fact, just yesterday, I had a guest on the program where we were talking about what you just brought up, the growing threat of ISIS, ISIS-K right here. On a scale of 1 to 10, just to get your general take, where would you land your concerns about ISIS, ISIS-K, some sort of terrorist attack happening in the United States due to the open border that's left us vulnerable to potential terrorists?
I'm horrified. That's a 10 plus, Jody. I've been talking about this for 2 years. It's not just the 9 million illegals that have come in that have had some kind of encounter with law enforcement. I'm gravely concerned about the 2 million that have snuck in under the dark of night in full camouflage and ghillie suits. When they know that they can just go to Eagle Pass, they know they can go to Yuma and walk in and get basically a bus ticket anywhere they want, a flight ticket anywhere they want, new clothes, traveling money, and a cell phone. So how bad of a criminal do you have to be to sneak into this country? And there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million of those folks that have not had encounters. And I am gravely concerned about what are they going to do to our infrastructure. Every time we see an infrastructure failure now, whether it's a rail line or this big commercial freighter that hit the Key Bridge in Baltimore Harbor and shut down one of the largest shipping channels in the country for who knows how long. Every time something like that happens right now, we need to start doing additional investigations to make determinations about whether it was just a ship that had bad maintenance taking care of it, or were there other things going on?
Absolutely. Well, Congressman, I want to thank you. You've been such a champion on the border and so many other issues. I look at John Kirby, for example, came out. All you need to do is pass what the Senate sent over to you. The reality is the House passed H.R. 2 and sent it to the Senate, where Chuck Schumer won't even give it a vote. That is, that would absolutely to the southern border. They speak out of both sides of their mouth. Congressman Matt Rosendale, always a great honor to speak with you. Thank you for coming yet again.
God bless you and your viewers. Thanks for having me on.
God bless you as well. All right, friends, after the break, we have some good news, some scratcher news coming out of the Florida State Supreme Court. They delivered a major win for life yesterday, but then they left the open door about the whole issue as well. We'll talk about all of it right after the break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back in a moment.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you joining us today. I'm Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony. All right. Yesterday, the Florida State Supreme Court issued a ruling that will allow the six-week abortion ban, which I'm sure you've heard of by now. The Florida legislature passed that last year. It is now, the door is open for it to take effect beginning May 1st. This represents an effort literally decades in the making, an effort to try to reverse a previous decision by the Florida Supreme Court that allowed abortion due to a privacy clause that was in the state constitution. So no question, this decision is a major, major win for life. But the court, in another ruling, also allowed a ballot initiative to move forward this coming November, when voters will be able to decide on a state constitutional amendment that would allow abortion up to 24 weeks of pregnancy. Now, because this is a constitutional amendment, it would require 60% of the voters in order to amend the state constitution. But joining me now to unpack all of this for us is Matt Staver. He, of course, is the founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. He has been very outspoken to the Florida Supreme Court on both of these cases. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Jody. You're exactly right. We had these two decisions from the same court on the same day, one that was a culmination of 35 years of work beginning in 1989 when the activist liberal Florida Supreme Court at that time twisted this 1980 constitutional amendment that had nothing to do with abortion, but was about documents and privacy of your documents to apply to abortion. For 35 years, we have worked to overturn that decision, filing an amicus brief as far back as 1989 on that same case. Great decision, finding that there's no right to abortion in the Florida Constitution, upholding the 15-week abortion ban, and then allowing the six-week heartbeat law to go into effect in the next few weeks. Amazing decision, huge impact. But on the same day, in a 4-3 decision, the same court allowed a Planned Parenthood-backed abortion amendment to go forward if they can get enough signatures to certify it on the ballot in November. And that abortion amendment, it's actually even more extreme than allowing abortion up through 24 weeks. It allows no law, none at all, from the moment of fertilization until viability, which could be late second, early third trimester. No law will be allowed to exist, not even health and safety regulations. But beyond viability, if there is a late-term abortion law that is passed, then a healthcare provider can override that by a veto, simply saying that it's necessary for the health of the woman. Now, who is a healthcare provider under this amendment? About 58 different categories, which includes non-medical personnel, such as a 911 operator, a massage therapist, an orthotic shoe fitter, the assistant to the orthotic shoe fitter, a tattoo artist, and the list goes on and on. No medical training. They'd be able to give medical opinions under this radical abortion amendment. Therefore, really, no abortion would be prohibited through all 9 months of pregnancy up to and including birth if this passes.
So abortion would be permitted all the way through. Why did the court make that decision? I mean, if you're talking a tattoo artist and some of these massage therapists or whatever, to have that kind of authority, why? I mean, anyone could look at this and say, these are not medical professionals even. Why would the Supreme Court say, yeah, these people can make this decision? Do you have any clue what drove them to allow that initiative to move forward in November?
Well, you know, the three dissenting justices, all females, issued a great dissent. They pointed out the fact that this does not comply with Florida law because a voter initiative must not be deceptive. It must be very clear so that when you read the ballot summary, you know what you're voting for when you say yes or no. It has to be very clear. And they said, no, this is far from clear. It is confusing. It is intentionally vague. It does not apprise the voter of the impact. No voter would know or have a clue that no abortion would be permitted. No voter would even suggest or think that a tattoo artist could determine viability, or even if the baby is viable in that non-medical opinion, then that abortion is still necessary. They wouldn't be thinking about that. They also found that it violated the single subject rule because it disables all three branches of government, because it does not allow any law protecting abortion clinics from regulation, or women, I should say, from abusive procedures. There's no even health or safety regulations that will be allowed. So they got it right. But the other four is just amazing, because I was there. I presented part of the oral argument at the court, and the Chief Justice really got the concern nailed down. He said the voters aren't being informed that this law can impact other existing laws that recognize the humanity of the unborn child. Laws that are criminal, civil, wills and trust, guardianship laws, they all say, quote, the unborn child or unborn person has legal rights. And it could impact Article 1, Section 2 of the Florida Constitution. He brought that up, that it says natural persons have the right to life. This could impact the unborn, and clearly the voters are not apprised. But then in his adjoining of the other three to make the four-member majority, he recognized those concerns, but said, you know, they're possibly hypothetical. We don't know exactly the impact, which is the problem. If they don't know the impact, then the voters don't know the impact, and that's the problem, and that's why it should never go forward. You should know exactly what you're voting on. But on the other hand, the one silver lining is between the number of justices that commented, the three dissenters, and another, that Chief Justice in the majority, to make a majority, clearly opened the door, the dissenters clearly, and the Chief Justice clearly, to the idea that we could bring another challenge to have the court rule on the personhood of the child based upon the Florida Constitution itself. So that's certainly a door open for any future challenges if this passes.
Well, Matt, a fascinating day that took place yesterday. Myself, all of us, we say thank you for the incredible work that you have done, Liberty Counsel, standing in the gap on this critical issue. Thank you for coming on the program and unpacking all of this for us as it moves towards November. No question, we'll be looking to you for some more answers. Matt Staver, Liberty Counsel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be with you.
All right, friends, after the break, we're going to be looking into Wisconsin today. Right now, they're dealing with some election integrity issues. We'll bring it all your way right after the break. Stay tuned.
Cool.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Again, good afternoon. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in this week for Tony. All right, as we continue our focus on election integrity this week, I'd like to remind you that today is the official release of my new book titled Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. Right here, I just got my copy of it. It's tremendous book. Listen, this is an issue, election integrity, that all of us need to get engaged in. This is something that, of course, our entire republic hinges upon, the voice of the people being accurately heard. I want to encourage you to, this evening, jump on Amazon or wherever you buy books and get a copy of Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. This is an issue that you and your friends and family need to stay on top of, deal with a lot of my experiences in Congress and how and why I became a lead voice on this issue. So again, get your copy. But as we talk about election integrity taking place right now as we speak in Wisconsin, voters are headed to the polls where they can help pass two constitutional amendments to help bolster election integrity in their state. The first measure would ban the use of private money to run elections. The second proposal would require that only election officials who are designated by law can administer elections. So the polls are open until 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, so there's still time for those of you in Wisconsin to head to the polls, and we encourage you to do so. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Trevor Carlson. He's a senior research fellow at the Foundation for Government Accountability. Trevor, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Thank you, Congressman Heiss. It's great to be with you.
All right, well, let's talk about these two provisions in order. Question one, about the use of private funds. This obviously coming from the Zuckerbucks that poured into the 2020 elections. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as folks might be well aware, there was this grant program that was orchestrated by an organization called the Center for Tech and Civic Life, CTCL, and they were using nearly a half a billion dollars, $400 million, I think, was one of the initial gifts from Mark Zuckerberg and one of his foundations to distribute money to election offices in the 2020 election under the guise of being supposed to be used for protecting people from transmission of COVID-19. And, you know, it was during the pandemic. What we found, though, was that, and this is the concerning part, is that very few of those dollars, when we looked at grant reports that these jurisdictions submitted after the fact, went to things like PPE. And a large share ended up being used for get out the vote efforts. And, you know, if you have nefarious intentions, a organization can then take those, can you know, unequally distribute grant dollars to jurisdictions that they deem to be important for outcomes that they prefer. And it puts the thumb on the scale of election outcomes and can drive up voter turnout in areas where they will get the benefit that they're looking for in terms of outcomes.
So the proposal today would prohibit those type of outside funds?
Exactly. And it's following in the heel on the heels of what 27 other states have already done. Wisconsin would be the 28th. And it's important to note, Wisconsin was actually ground zero for Zuckerbucks back in 2020, even before Mark Zuckerberg and his wife made their donation to CTCL. The big five municipalities in Wisconsin were already in conversations about getting private funding. At the time, they were talking about $6.3 million. After Mr. Zuckerberg's money was added to the pot, that climbed to eventual $8.5 for those five jurisdictions alone out of the $10.1 total that Wisconsin that was spread throughout Wisconsin.
Wow. All right, the second question on the ballot today deals with only election officials designated by law can perform the election proceedings. How important is that one?
That's extremely important. And, you know, you would think that it wouldn't have to be said that the clerk of elections should be the one running elections. But in 2020 in Green Bay, there was an issue where the mayor's office was getting involved, and they even had a outside consultant who's really a Democratic operative who was engaging in, you know, offering to help with the curing process for ballots and was reportedly also giving keys. You know, it should be that the election officer whose jurisdiction it is to run the elections should be the one administering them, and not having outside players participating in decision making, and sort of, you know, when it comes down to trust as well. In that,
absolutely,
when you have these outside impacts influencers, it's going to distort people's view of whether or not an election is actually being conducted as it was intended to be.
Real quickly, we've only got about a minute or so. Any sense for the popularity of these referendums? Do you have a prediction? Are they bipartisan? What do you think is going to happen?
They're certainly bipartisan. You know, Pennsylvania is a state that has a Democratic governor, and they were, you know, they've enacted a ban like this. Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Democratic Senate back when they passed it, you know, it went through without any problems. It's election integrity is a bipartisan issue. It's a nonpartisan issue. Americans want their elections to be free from outside influence, and they want the election outcomes to be, you know, let the voters vote and the outcomes be what they may.
Absolutely. Trevor Carlson from the Foundation for Government Accountability. Always great to talk with you. Thanks for this update tonight.
Yes, thanks for having
me. All right, friends. Coming up, we have a tragic story from Oklahoma that reveals how vulnerable children are too often victims of the left's gender ideology. You don't want to miss this segment, although it will be disturbing, but we'll jump into it right after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Hope you're having a great afternoon. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in for Tony this week. All right, this next story, I have to tell you, it is tremendously sad. I think it provides, though, yet another example of how the left's extreme push of gender ideology can capture vulnerable children who then all too often end up becoming casualties. Earlier this year in Oklahoma, a 16-year-old female student, Dagny Benedict, she went by the name Nex, and she identified as non-binary. She died the day after there was an altercation with classmates in the girls' bathroom at school. Well, probably not surprisingly, the left, including President Biden, people like Elizabeth Warren, Nancy Pelosi, and many others, they seized on this girl's death to push their agenda. In fact, the New Republic even blamed her death on Republicans on the Oklahoma State Legislature with a headline. And get this headline. This is just so vicious. Oklahoma Republicans passed a bathroom bill. Now a trans kid is dead. What a headline. Well, last month, the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's report was released. It cited suicide as the cause of this student's death. More recently, an investigation into court reports revealed that this young girl was also sexually abused by her own father beginning when she was 9 years old, and it lasted for a period of some 2 years. So not only does this whole reality truth, not only does this not fit the left's narrative of Republican bigots driving a teenager to suicide, this tragic story demonstrates how psychological trauma and mental health comorbidities can lead to gender confusion. It's a serious issue. Joining me now to help us understand all of this is Dr. Jennifer Bowens. She's the director of the Center for Family Studies here at the Family Research Council. Prior to her work, by the way, at FRC, Dr. Bowens worked as a clinician and researcher addressing the effects of psychological drama. As a researcher, she studied things like the traumatic effect of events like 9/11. Dr. Bowens, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Good to be back with you, Jody.
All right. There is a lot to unpack in this deeply sad story. What happened to this young girl, beginning when she's just 9 years old? It's sad. It ought to make anyone angry. Give us your thoughts as the truth about this young girl comes out.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw the medical examiner, what they reported, I thought to myself, this sounds like a trauma victim story. And it's so sad to think that, you know, here we have another situation that mirrors so many stories that we hear in this line of work and in the clinical setting as well, much like our own Walt Heyer's story. And in this case, the medical examiner said about this young woman that she was diagnosed with bipolar, she had anxiety, depression, and she was self-harming and using substances like marijuana. She was using them chronically. These are all things that point to someone with a trauma history. Even if we didn't have the court documents released and we were just going based off of this knowledge. Because what happens is trauma victims are often given a lot of different diagnoses. And this girl, you know, bipolar, depression, anxiety, all of these things can actually be symptoms of someone who's gone through trauma and childhood sexual abuse. So, you know, definitely the self-harming behaviors. These are things that somebody who was clear-headed and looking for these kinds of signs would detect that and say, you know, let's investigate this. Let's see what's going on with her. Does she need help to sort through these traumas? But instead, you know, we have not only has this girl been abused and mistreated in her lifetime, but now in her own death, she's been abused and mistreated by a political agenda. And that is just so disheartening to see someone's deep pain and abuse be used for the purposes of advancing an agenda that's not helpful, not helpful
in
the least.
That is so true. You know, it is a horrible story what happened to this young girl just in and of itself. But on a different level, it is also angering and maddening what you just shared, how the left jumps on this whole story for the purpose of pushing a radical, harmful left-wing agenda, accusing Republicans really of having blood on their hands for passing laws to try to actually prevent this kind of thing. But now that the facts have come to light on all of this, have any of them apologized? Have any of them come out and said, oh, we were wrong to jump to conclusions about this? None that I've heard of. I imagine that's the same with you.
Yeah, none that I've heard of. And the reason, I think, in part for that is the facts are so lacking on their side. The science is so lacking. And the reports are increasing of true psychological harm that these procedures, the transgender procedures, impose on kids. And so the only narrative that they really have is this idea of, you know, kids are being bullied, which, by the way, kids who've been traumatized and gone through childhood traumas are often bullied because they're going through things that are so different than their peers who aren't being abused. So when you see a kid being bullied, that's also a warning sign. Do I need to find out what's going on in the home? or in this kid's social setting. It's not always the case, but it is often the case that kids who have major childhood disruptions can be bullied. So, you know, here we have people who aren't willing to look at root issues, and they're just pushing an agenda and a narrative the best they can. And here was a situation that seemed like it could be fully rooted only in the idea that this young girl was bullied for a trans identity. And there was so much more going on here. And we're not getting any apologies. We're not getting any retractions. And also, how is that helpful to demonize one side? To say that Republicans are responsible for the deaths of a young person, when our goal and our heart motivation is really to protect kids from procedures that are not scientific. It just doesn't move the discourse at all.
No, it doesn't. In fact, you brought up so many things there. My mind is going 1,000 different directions on different questions and paths that we could run down. But let me jump on this one that you said a few moments ago, that all these procedures are so harmful to children. All right, we know that. Even Europe now is recognizing this, and they're reversing course on so much of this stuff. And yet we continue pushing forward, push, harming these children and seeing the outcomes, the tragic outcomes such as this. One of the questions, Dr. Bowens, that people ask me over and over and over is the question, why? Why in the world are these people, the political left, why are they pushing policies that are so harmful to children? What is behind it? Can you help us? Can you explain perhaps the motive of those that are pushing gender ideology and the LGBT agenda and so forth on our children?
Yeah, let's take it back for a minute, back to the early 1900s. You have a guy named Magnus Hirschfeld, and he started an organization about, in the name is the Sexual Sciences and Eugenics. Okay, so his organization and his work influenced Harry Benjamin, who was the founder of the W Path, which if you've seen any of our latest programs, you've seen us talk about the W Path leaks, and this organization created the standards of care, supposedly, so standards of care for transgender quote unquote medicine. And keep in mind, they're friends and they're hanging out with people like Margaret Sanger, who is the founder of Planned Parenthood. Right. So this is in the backdrop, you know, and key into the word eugenics. You know, what's eugenics about? You know, it's you're playing God. You're playing God with people and human beings. So at one level, you have at the root of an ideology this idea that I can create my own world, my own reality. Then you fast forward and you have people like J.B. Pritzker, who have spent millions upon millions of dollars, and other folks as well. I'm just picking out one person who has been influential in funding education and medical organizations, who then, you know, the role of education, at least in our country, you know, you look at the Ivies, was to propagate the gospel. It was to raise up missionaries. And that mission still
exists.
Right? Mm-hmm. But that mission still exists. And so there is an evangelistic, a negative evangelistic component to their calling. And so they have released that doctrine on many students and around the world. And so, you know, you have spiritual and ideological motivations. You have money. You have people who are themselves probably abused and finding their identity in an ideology like this, which we, by the way, we have to keep that in mind. There's what happened to somebody who could say, who could deny the existence of their biological reality? What's going on in the heart of a person? So we have to pray for them as well, even as we, push forward and disallow them to have influence over our children. So there are a lot of factors here, and certainly looking back at the root system will give us a clue about what the purpose is in transing our kids and the God complex.
That's fascinating, Dr. Bounds, what you come up with. And what really hit me is how you took the original purposes of these schools, the Ivy schools, virtually all of them that I've looked at in research, they were birthed to advance the gospel. And now that spiritual component and mission has been twisted to where now they are pushing their own gospel, the destruction of life, and all this absolute upside down, backwards, twisted truth in the lives of people. I want to get your reaction to this. There's the economic component. No doubt there's a lot of money in this. There's all these root causes you bring up. But there is the spiritual aspect pushing all this forward. Can you take us down that path a little bit further?
Yeah. And one thing that this ideology does is it often finds its way into vulnerable people and put children. Who's most vulnerable? Children. He's even more vulnerable. Children who've been broken in some way, who've been wounded in some way. And so this ideology, it further promotes a disconnection from that child's true identity and to who God has truly created them to be. And that's, you know, I think that the wonderful thing about where we're at in this day and age, it truly is an incredible day. I think God has given us an invitation with this generation to be like Mary, the Mary who broke her alabaster box over Jesus, and it was a year's wage, and she broke that over Jesus. And who was she? She was a very sexually broken person. I imagine she didn't have much identity and really self-worth, but she gave one of the most extravagant acts of worship over Jesus and Jesus himself said what she did will be remembered for all time. And so think that we have a generation that is very sexually broken, very broken in their identity, and they could be the very next Mary of the alabaster box who offers Jesus such extravagant worship and becomes that sweet aroma to him. And that's a really exciting thought, and that we as the church could be ready to steward such a generation and also help raise them up into that calling.
So true. And that is the mantle that we have, and that is what we offer. And that woman you mentioned, her life was transformed. And she left that life of confusion and immorality, and she was transformed by an encounter with Christ. And that is the same answer that we have today, not only for these children, but for our entire generation. Dr. Jennifer Bowens, always an honor to speak with you. Thanks for unfolding this sad story to us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jody.
All right, friends, that concludes another edition here on Washington Watch. Thank you so much for entrusting this time to us. Our mission is to bring you the news from a biblical perspective. Have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.